Yeah, I mean, these boys are really a crude way of saying it, middle to low academic kids based on their previous experience. You know, their data from year 9 and 10 show they weren't, if you stream them, they're middle to low end academics in terms of literacy and numeracy. Does that mean they're dumb? No way, man. Like, these kids blow me away every day, and they got more resilience to push through hard learning tasks than a lot of other kids that you'd see in high end, high stream classes, you know. And
listening to the NZPE Teacher Cast, a podcast sharing some of the inspirational stories from amazing teachers and educators within New Zealand and around the world. Today's episode is sponsored by My Study Series, an online learning platform supporting Kiwi teachers and students through NCEA. With automated self-grading quizzes after every video, My Study Series ensures students receive immediate feedback on their level of understanding. Check it out now at mystudyseries.co.nz.
Kia ora everyone and welcome back to the NZPE Teacher Cast. Super excited to host a really passionate teacher from the east coast of New Zealand. Julian Reid is one of the most passionate teachers you'll ever meet, and I think you'll be inspired to make a difference with your students after listening to today's episode. Julian is a PE and health teacher from Whakatane High School and heads their Sport and Education project, which is having a really positive impact on student outcomes. So Julian, welcome to the podcast.
Cool, thanks man, thanks for having me.
Hey, before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about your teaching background and experience and a few tidbits about your school and the students you teach?
Yeah, I kind of got in teaching in a funny way. I actually got kicked out of teachers college and then I floated around Palmy for a year, and then I got offered a job at Kawerau College because there were no young Kiwi males willing to go teach there countrywide. So my mate rang me up as I was working in a pizza shop in Palmy and said, "Hey, mate, do you want to give teaching another crack?" And I went up and I stayed for 2.5 years unqualified on a limited authority to teach, which was like 25 grand a year. And then I thought, actually, I quite like this and I'm sick of doing the same job someone else does for like 50K a year. So I went back to study and finished my degree off extramurally living in Whakatane. And just chipped away at it over 3 years. But because I was asked to leave Teachers College, I couldn't finish with a Bachelor of Education. I had to cross credit and basically do a diploma year. So I got Bachelor of Sport and Exercise, Diploma Teaching, and then landed a job at Trident High School. I was there for 2 years. And then Tarawera High School opened when Kawerau College shut, and jumped in the deep end and was senior manager there for 2 years. Then I was a homeroom teacher and specialist classroom teacher there for year 10s. And then we bought a house in Whakatane last year, and I jumped on board at Whakatane High School. So been there for two terms.
That's it's really interesting story you got there, and I didn't realise just the your kind of your background, your story, and it's pretty cool. It's cool you fell back into teaching, because I think we do need teachers like you out there.
Yeah.
So, oh, cheers. So you're from the east coast of New Zealand, which for me personally is my least travelled area of New Zealand. So for us big city folk, can you describe what life in general is like living in this awesome part of New Zealand? And it's not so much a "do you guys have internet yet" type question, but more along the lines of you selling Whakatane to us and creating an image for us.
Well, some of my kids don't actually have the internet, believe it or not, especially up towards Ruatoki. Some of those houses aren't connected, even though the whole area has been snapped and stuff. But yeah, Eastern Bay is a really chilled out, beautiful spot. I was actually born and raised in Tauranga, but I left there in 1999, and I wouldn't go back there unless I was 10 years younger and single pretty much. But, you know, you got Ohopi Beach just over the hill from Whakatane, which is probably your safest, friendliest spot to learn to surf at, bring kids to the beach at. And then you got around Whakatane, you got the ridiculously pristine, beautiful bush and the uduwetas and hunting and all that sort of stuff. So it's pretty much a wilderness paradise. But in saying that, like, it's still pretty sleepy and quiet on a Sunday afternoon. Most shops do shut, which is actually part of the beauty of Whakatane. You got no paid parking, you got beautiful beaches, beautiful scenery, and the kids are real humble and rural, even though it's, you know, in the 21st century, you still got that edge to it where they're still small town, but not too naive that it's it makes it too hard to teach or anything like that. It's just good balance of it all. Probably what Tauranga was 15 years ago.
Yeah. No, it sounds amazing. And to be honest, I really should get up there a little bit more. But it's a little bit off the track. So you tend not to get there.
Yeah.
So the ethnic makeup of Whakatane High is about 53% Māori. And this makes for a fairly unique learning environment. So what specific actions did your school take and staff take to celebrate, say, tikanga and student success on a daily basis?
Yeah, it's little things. It's more how you approach kids. Even things like looking in the eye is even for a lot of Pacific Island cultures too, like touching the head, looking in the eye is a sort of a knowledge about what's acceptable, sitting on tables and stuff like that. But in terms of formalities, it's tikanga and karakia every day to start the day, whether you're in assembly or in the form classes. Once a week, you have an Iti Pōnamu program, which is kind of like it's your standard homework club, but it's got a sort of whānau flavour to it. There's kai available, and it is about being a sort of a real inclusive group where it doesn't really matter what subject your teaching background is, you go in to help these kids, and it is targeted for these for the Māori kids in school to get that sort of connectedness with the teachers. And develop the relationships before you focus on the learning, as a more traditional homework club might do it. So those are sort of the things you'd see around on a daily basis. But underneath all that, you've got a lot of Eastern-based schools are doing it because of the high Māori population up here is Kia Ike Pānuku, which is focusing on culturally responsive and relational pedagogy, which is a massive government initiative, looking at how you approach your planning and teaching and what lens you look at the classroom with. So it's really trying to be student-centered and sharing the power, and you'd want to hear the kids' voice as much as the teachers, and that's sort of how the undertone about where we want to go at Whakatane.
Yeah, and I've heard you bring up this program quite a bit through sport and education and stuff it seems like as a teacher you value it and you're seeing some positive stuff come from it.
Yeah, without a doubt. Like when we set up Tarawera High School, there's lots of 21st century pedagogies you want to do because we're in an MLE, and the same as a traditional school in Whakatane, we're sort of trying to teach in a 21st century way, and how research over decades will say that what works for Māori kids is, a shared powered environment where the kids can self-determine or have say in what they learn, how they learn, and they're real collaborative. The buzzword is interactive or dialogic conversations, which is basically student-to-student conversations based on what they're learning, and the whole assessment process looks at what you're hearing and what you're seeing within the classroom, and it goes beyond that in terms of like the reciprocal teaching and stuff like that. But fundamentally, it is down to, if you're looking in a classroom with a good culturally responsive relational pedagogy, is there a sense of warmth and caring from student to student and staff to student as well? Massive on relationships first, and letting Māori achieve as Māori, and however they interpret what being Māori is how they see it, and you kind of, being Pākehā, you kind of just got to try and understand where they're coming from. But it doesn't make it just relevant for Māori kids, like it's actually just common sense as well, I think, coming from the way I approach teaching.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. What's good for Māori is good for everybody, and that strong focus on relationships is paramount to what we do as teachers.
Definitely.
Can you elaborate, you just mentioned something before around eye contact. What's unique about that?
Oh, it's just staring people. It's not necessarily a Māori thing, but staring people down in the eye and, being sort of that authoritarian figure. Like if you back some of the Eastern Bay kids into a corner, they're not going to roll down and submit. They're going to look you back in the eye. So it's not about staring down and being this authoritarian figure. It's more so just getting on their level, because quite often when you do see teachers yell at them, or yelling at them, at Māori kids or Pākehā kids around the Eastern Bay, the response from the kid is a yell back, whereas maybe in some other schools the kids are maybe a bit more submissive or something like that. But getting alongside the kid, it's kind of come from a restorative approach as well, where you treat the behaviour, not the kid, as a, kind of come alongside and use it as an educational opportunity instead of a punitive opportunity.
Yeah, for sure.
And from what I found, that works a million times better with the Māori kids, this restorative approach, as opposed to a traditional Auckland grammar, pull your socks up, move out of my way, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I hear you there.
Yeah.
I've gotten to know you kind of the last 6 months, both sport and education schools. What's your take on sport and education? How would you describe it to someone who's kind of hearing about it for the first time?
For me, I've learned a lot in the last 6 months, because what Pete and Ben explained to me at school was sort of how Whakatane High School have done it, and they've had success with that. But going to these meetings in Wellington and that, it's far bigger than what sort of what I first interpreted about it all. But I suppose for us, the way we do it is we try and link the learning through physical education, but a bit bigger picture than that. It's more using sport or physical activity as a context. Even the way you structure a lesson with warm-up, skills and drills and game time and a debrief at the end can be applied to a theory lesson or, you know, inside the classroom. But also just using sport as a vehicle or a medium to educate even like social responsibility, social consciousness, learning through and about physical activity or movement. It's sort of quite a cool sort of open forum about how you interpret what you want to do, and alongside that it's all the active pedagogy about movement inside the classroom, standing up to answer questions, and not the teacher walking around handing out bits of paper, getting the kids blood pumping a little bit each time you get into a classroom.
What learning areas do you have involved?
At our school, we've got three: physical education, English, and science. In the science, though, Ben's getting a number of numeracy credits,
mm-hmm.
and we're looking to grow that into maths next year.
Cool. I've been meaning to ask you, because we just got back from Penn's last week. Were you happy with that presentation we did?
Yeah, I was pretty nervous, actually, because I was sort of opening up to what we did at school, and I definitely don't feel like we're leaders in the sport and education field because I'm so new to it and Joss is so new to it. But I was proud to show what we've accomplished in two terms. I was pleased that we had about 60 people in there willing to sort of hear about what it was. I think that what Jane said at the start would have really given a really good understanding to people new to sport and education, what it was about, and maybe sowed the seed of active pedagogy to people who already preach it in PE, but give them the confidence to go do that and approach other teachers in their school to get a way more connected team teaching approach towards it. So yeah. Hopefully that's what we got out of it. I was proud to be part of it.
For those of you listening, we, Julian, Jane, Matt Cleaver and myself, we did a joint presentation at Penn's conference on how sport and education is working for us and kind of explaining that. And it was quite a good session. There were a lot of people there. So I think it went well, and I've seen a little bit of feedback around it. So got a few people excited, so that was good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was probably 250, 300 people at Penn's in general, and we had, you know, 60 there for that workshop, and there was plenty of others they could have gone to, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So you guys have a selection process, right? How does this work? Why not just handpick them?
Well, it kind of is. It's the list of kids I got given to me this year were partly tapped on the shoulder and encouraged to go into it because these kids needed a bit more of a supportive or inclusive environment. Being an all boys class, predominantly Māori, it sort of was able to get that connectedness, or the boys call it a brotherhood in the class, and there's a real bond between them. And once these kids feel that connectedness and feel that support around them, they're far more open to learning. If they feel like they are just another number or in a row, these guys will sort of back off a little bit and not engage in class discussion. So we sort of try to build on this culture that they've set there, being predominantly a Māori boys class. It is sort of Whakatane High School does stream their kids at a junior level, so we've kind of carried that on into this class. So a really crude way of putting it would be kids who haven't necessarily shown a lot of strength in academic or numeracy or literacy. We had four of them come from the learning centre, which means they've just need more assistance when it comes to reading and writing and stuff like that. So it's sort of kids cut from a similar sort of jib. and other guys have come into it just because they've shown a real passion for physical activity, and they'll sort of add a lot more to the practical sessions or the theory sessions. They've got to add something, I suppose, to it. Or, in saying that, a couple of guys this year just were kind of lost in education system, weren't necessarily athletes. They didn't play for team sports in the school, but they got a good connectedness with the boys in the class, and we've had real success with one of them in particular, him, just the way he's attending and carrying himself around school. So it's kind of open to a certain group of kids in the school if they're keen to do it.
Nice, and I like that kind of brotherhood has just come through from it. You know, we draw from a big Pacifica and Māori community here, and that's what our school is. That's what it's known for, is its brotherhood. And when I first moved here, a few of my colleagues, of ex workmates from another industry were kind of like, "Oh, Rongotogs, what are you thinking going there for?" And I was like, "Oh man, have I made the right choice?" But I got there and I saw the brotherhood, and I saw the way they treated the teachers and the respect they have for one another. And it doesn't happen all the time, but you can definitely see that flavour come through, and it's really cool to be a part of that.
Yeah, definitely. It's a massive thing that keeps these boys in school.
Yeah. So you're implementing sport and education at year 11.
Yeah.
Did you start at the senior school, or did you do some groundwork within the juniors?
They deliberately, as far as I know and what I've been told, they deliberately started it at NCAA level 1 because these boys were going okay in junior school because there wasn't the pressures of NCAA on them. And same with the teachers. You know, they could probably cater and adapt their programs a lot more. As soon as you get into level 1, you're... And even though you shouldn't be, you know, you do feel the pressure of the assessment and credit achievement. And so with these guys, if they went into the normal timetable with multiple teachers, multiple transitions throughout the day, that what they were finding is through the COLE data, the community of learning up here, that the Māori boys, it's on par with national data, were struggling when they hit NCAA level 1. So one of the strategies from the school was to get this boys class up and running to try and curb that trend of slowly disengaging or achievement sort of dropping a little bit by the end of level 1. So it was more like, okay, let's wrap around them in the year that's really critical leading into level 2.
Yeah, so you've identified your weakness as well, and you've used data, and you've gone in and you're trying to trying to hit it like that. That's cool. You mentioned at Penn's conference that you were using solo taxonomy within sport and education, and I think that's really cool, and I want to incorporate it here, but it just, you know, I haven't got around to it yet. But can you tell us a little bit about that and how it fits into the program?
Yeah, the whole thing was, I remember, you know, at Teachers College you studied it and stuff like that, and then you go out into the real world and you get into PE teaching and you sort of forget all these awesome theoretical, you know, lesson structures that you do. But a lot of PE teachers and good teachers will scaffold they're learning similar to this anyway, and so you'd be surprised that this sort of structure's not completely foreign to you. But our Joss Matthews, our literacy specialist, who's the community of learning literacy specialist and the SIE English teacher, she sort of does this with the boys, and so she shared it with me. And when we were looking at the Achievement Standard 1.2, looking at functional anatomy and biomechanics, she applied it there to make it tangible for me to understand as well as the boys. So you're kind of starting off at this pre-structural stage, which is this first stage, and that's when the kids are struggling to even understand the concept. And once they are able to sort of identify or define and do simple elements to it, then they can start linking other things into their learning. So basically what they did was, in terms of anatomy, functional anatomy and movement, you know, she'd look at, initially she'd just identify bones and muscles and joints in isolation. And then to try and develop on that, she'd look at specific joints of the body and how those muscles and bones then attach to that. Then building on from that, you're linking into, okay, well, what type of movement does that joint allow and what is the purpose of it? And then as you're getting towards the, that's the first stages of uni and multi-structural ideas. So you're starting off with one concept, like maybe the bone or the muscle, then you're bringing in the joints and multi-structural understanding of this whole picture of anatomy. And then you get into this relational thinking area where you're starting to link and integrate more sort of higher level thinking concepts. So you develop an explanation of maybe how the joint functions, connecting with the muscles, like agonists, antagonists. So you bring in another level of understanding there, and then you're at your extended level, which is maybe starting to predict or hypothesize movements, and that's when the biomechanics and the forces, or the summation of forces applying to a shot put or javelin, might come into the higher end of thinking. So you're starting off just at the basic anatomy and then applying these structures, linking them, and then getting them to maybe hypothesize or generalize or evaluate sort of what would happen next. So it's just scaffolding the thinking process, really. It's kind of my real crude way of understanding it. And the way Joss explained it like that was kind of how I got a grasp of it.
You know, I guess it gives the student, it makes the level that they're at, it becomes really visible, and they know what they need to do to hit the next step, I guess.
Being visible is really important, because there is this just a flow diagram of boxes or symbols leading through the stage of learning you're at. And what Joss and I saw recently up at Manaiakalani Trust School, East Tamaki, every classroom had this big infographic of the solo taxonomy on every wall, every classroom. And whether the teachers there linked the learning to it or not, but it looked cool and it was present in the school. You know, you could sense that it was there. And so we're going to probably, you know, thinking forward to the future about how we approach any high order thinking concept or task, is that can the kids explain where they're at and what have they got to do to go to the next level, could be a theme running through SIE or even school wide, you know.
Yep. So you've been collecting a little bit of student voice this year. What seems to be the consensus from this cohort that's coming through in terms of success so far with sport and education?
I've done my own student voice just through a Google form to give me some feedback, and I've tried to balance the achievement standard work with things that I think they should need. Like, I took the boys into Pack and Save and I just said, find me the healthiest sport drink. And I showed them how to read nutritional labels and sugar content. Yeah. And then we watched the sugar movies. And so all of a sudden, all the boys are real proud drinking, bringing water bottles and stuff like that. But one of the comments in the student voice form was, too much health, more basketball. So I thought I was doing this big initiative, but it was cool, you know, like the kids didn't want to be saturated with just what I think's important, which was real good feedback for me. But overall, like the comments the boys shared with, we had a lady, Tara, come in from Sport Bay of Plenty recently, and they're producing a secondary school's newsletter. And she spoke to the boys privately. I had no idea, but the feedback she said they gave her was just that, they know that Ben and Joss and myself are working together and we're collaborating, and so they feel like we've got a real supportive environment behind the scenes for the boys, and that's pretty important for kids, especially Māori kids, knowing that they're really seen as important. They like the fact that this connection between the subjects, and we're not fully integrated by any means, but like I said, it depends. Like, we're just trying to get a themed or linking approach amongst all of it, and the boys are really enjoying that because they're finding it relatable and tangible and relevant for them. And one of them did actually say they wished year 9 and 10 at school was like this. And that's just good evidence if we want to grow our program. So overall, the boys are definitely feeling more supported and they value the themed approach to what we're doing. That's feedback from the boys. We've got some other bits of data from them. Like, we haven't had an assessment this year where less than 85%, you know, pass. So we've got really good pass rates, the achievement standard one and two. Awesome. Yeah, I mean, these boys are really a crude way of saying it, middle to low academic kids based on their previous experience. You know, their data from year 9 and 10 show they weren't, if you stream them, they're middle to low end academics in terms of literacy and numeracy. Does that mean they're dumb? No way, man. Like, these kids blow me away every day, and they got more resilience to push through hard learning tasks than a lot of other kids that you'd see in high stream classes, you know. And so I think we had 19 out of 20 pass the first two assessments term one, which is mean. And then we've got over 90% pass for achievement standard 1.2, and the merits are starting to increase a bit more. You know, like, these kids aren't going to come from year 9 and 10 then nail excellence straight away, that real high level stuff, but We've got a couple of kids with teacher aides for their reading and writing. So just operating at level six of the curriculum and succeeding give merits is awesome. So we've had a couple of kids drop out because their family moved away, or one kid basically school wasn't right for him, so he left. And we've got other cool bits of data around attendance as well.
That's cool, man. That's cool to hear. And as an educator, it's so hard not to kind of have that deficit approach where you come in and go, oh, these are Māori students and they're already low academic. Wow, I'm not going to be able to make much difference. So, you know, I'll just go with the flow. But, you know, you're so passionate about these kids, extending themselves and being able to learn and being successful in the classroom. So
I like to think that the work that these kids are producing are on par, because there's three level one PE classes in school plus my SIE boys, and I know that the work they've produced is on par with what the other classes are doing. It's just we've just got a different approach to how we do it.
Yep.
And we've got less kids in our classes. Like my mate's class has got over 30 kids and I've got 20, you know. So of course the contact time and the support, and I got two teacher aides in the room sometimes. So it's you'd expect to have more results with more adults in front of the kids as well.
Yep, certainly. Now, I know we're only halfway through the year, but 2018, what's that going to hold for Te Tāne Hai and sport and education?
Well, management met with us the other day with Joss and Ben and myself, and we've sort of thrown a few ideas at them. And basically, we're going to present to the heads of department, because things might change a little bit underneath them, just in terms of budgeting or staffing. But what we've proposed is to grow it to level two, because we're seeing successes with these kids. Like one of the kids' attendance when he was year 10 was about 68% when he finished year 10. At the start of the year, he was at 88% after term one, and after term two, he's at 92% attendance.
Wow.
And he was in the learning center and all these other barriers or labels you could put on him. But we got data like that saying this is working, and what's going to happen to this kid if we put him back into level two mainstream, bouncing around the school with all these different teachers and different co-puppers in every classroom at level two, which is even another big step up from level one. So what we want to do is we want to keep wrapping around these boys, and we want to go into level two SIE next year. So same teachers, same guys. But because the classes might be dropping down a little bit just with boys going into trades academy and stuff like that, which is going to follow a passion of theirs, and that's really awesome, we might have the room to fit maybe 10 girls into the class, because I think we've got a real need to cater for the girls in our school as well, because all COL data and ministry data is all about raising Māori boys' student achievement, but man, there's Māori girls at our school who need it just as much, so we really want to cater for them as well. So the level two potentially could be mixed gender. I mean, we're a co-ed school anyway, so it's the norm. At level one, we want to do exactly what we've done this year, but in a homeroom, because we want the learning environment to really represent the boys. At the moment, my PE class is in two different maths rooms, and those are other teachers' maths rooms. You know, we're the only other guys going in there. So it's not like I can rearrange the desks how I want them, or just put stuff all up over the walls how I want them. And, you know, all that the study from Kia Kapanoku and Tiko Tahitanga programs will say, that if you want Māori kids to achieve, you want the learning environment to represent their successes, and they want to be able to see their success up on the wall or whatever. So we want to get a room in the school that's based for SIE, and then you could do a lot more in terms of, like, even the way you run your active pedagogy. You can get sports tables and academic charts, just stuff on the wall to show their progress, whereas if you had another classroom, you can't just take over the whole room. So in 2018, we want to have a home room for the SIE level one, and a definite level two program operating within the school. But whether that's in a homeroom as well, whether the timetable can fit that, we're not sure. We kind of hope when they get to level two, they can handle a few more transitions after the foundation we've given them this year. And we're probably going to be pushing just a little bit more of the way they learn and operate digitally, with a combined website for the teachers or student portfolios with blogs to share their learning and really engage the family too.
That's awesome. And
that's the next level.
Just having that transparency back home and stuff like that. And you know, with the results that you're seeing this year, it's it's a no-brainer that, you know, your senior leaders are supporting you through to level two. So that's awesome to hear.
Yeah, they made that call early on. They said, you know, the green light to level two, but we want you to help us see how it looks. You know, and we met with the head, you know, DP in charge of timetable. We met with her last term, and she was stoked because she gives enough time to cater for that. There's never a problem with timetabling if there's enough time to sort it, you know.
Yep. Hey, last question.
Yeah.
What's your choice and why? Surf, ski, skate, or mountain bike? What's it going
to
be?
Oh, man. Well, I used to make my own longboards, skateboards, and would go skating around all the subdivisions of Tauranga before the houses were built. So as a youngster, I probably would have said skate. And I do ski and snowboard. But living where I live, man, you can't beat hopping on a longboard, 9-foot longboard and 2-foot west end of Ohopi with your best mates out surfing on a Friday evening when the sun goes down, man. It's good for your soul. So I'd have to say surfing for
nice.
Sure.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hey, Julian, I just want to thank you for taking the time out to have a yarn. You know, I've sat there last few meetings we've had in Wellington, and I've listened to you speak, and I've just kind of thought to myself that you're a real passionate dude. And
cool, man.
Just the chat we've had today just, you know, reinforces your passion and your belief in your students, and I think that's really important. And I think a lot of teachers would aspire to have your level of enthusiasm for their students, and I think it's really cool to hear you talk about.
I appreciate the words, man, and I've just loved the opportunity to be part of this program this year. And you know, in terms of where we go for Māori kids around here, I like to think that the way these kids sit in their classrooms now is nothing like how their parents sat. You know, that's the goal. Is it's got to change, because no matter what's happening for kids, Māori or Pākehā, it's got to look different to what it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, how their parents were, because we're losing kids in the education system because they're disengaging, not because it's not the right place for them.
Yeah.
Now, thanks for your time. I appreciate the opportunity, Carl.
No, cheers, mate.